is go.
Pegasus is go.
PTC is go.
Copy, S is go.
Houston flight is go.
Polycom.
STM is go.
Safety comp is go.
STU is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Site Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So, buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not going to stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. Tuesday night edition of the show, 6th of July. Welcome to it. And hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig. How are you this evening?
I'm good. It's been rainy here all day, but not as rainy as it is where you are.
Well, actually, we're on the East Coast. Elsa's going up the West Coast. We had more issues last night. Terrible thunderstorms raining off and on today. I think if we're going to get any feeder bands, it'll be tonight, and that'll be it.
Those thunderstorms, that's kind of typical, isn't it, of the leading edge when one of those comes through? That's always kind of pushed out in front.
Yeah, but this is a Cat 1, if it's even that. I mean, let's just say we don't panic till it's about a Cat 3.
Well, you know, it's funny. My wife, today, she and I were running some errands, and she says, is Diane in the way of that hurricane that's, you know, hitting down there in Florida? And I said, no. I said, you know, Florida's kind of that long, skinny thing, sticks down there. And I said, Diane's on one side, the hurricane's coming from the other side. I said, for Diane, it's probably going to be more of a rain event than anything.
Yeah. Yeah, we are getting a lot of rain. But remember, at the part of Florida where I am, it's only 100 miles across. And if the hurricane is big enough, even if it goes up the West Coast, you'll still get it. It depends on the size, but this one is not that big. It's not really anything that any of us are panicking about.
Well, this one blew off a lot of energy over the Caribbean, coming over Cuba. Mm-hmm. You know, and it gains a little bit more strength as it leaves there and arcs up. But, you know, now that it's made landfall, it's going to weaken again. And,
yes.
You know, but it's the beginning of the season, so you got plenty to look forward to.
Yes, and speaking of season, guys, we want you to know that for the summer months, we're going to be doing our, obviously, two shows, Tuesday and Friday. On Tuesday, we're going to run from 7 to 8:30, and then on Fridays, we're going to have an all-talkie show from 7 to 8, just for the summer months.
Yep, and then we'll get ourselves back to normal after that. But let me tell folks what we got coming up on the show tonight. We've got two really good, strong segments that you're not going to want to miss. We're going to break this segment off a little early tonight so we can get into Diane's segment, because there's a lot of information. The op-ed that she's got out right now is a cacophony of design flaws and construction mistakes. Obviously, what she's talking about, we told you about this last Friday, she's going to be talking about the tower that collapsed north of Miami Beach up there in Surfside, Florida.
Okay.
And
not north of, it is on Miami. This is what people don't understand, and the media is getting it quite confused. Miami Beach is Miami Beach. It runs from one end almost up to the, it runs from Government Cut almost up to the Broward County line. There are different little cities on Miami Beach. Surfside is one of the cities on Miami Beach. There is a city of Miami Beach. This is not Miami mainland, folks.
I know. That's why I said Surfside, but thank you for clarifying. But, you know, this tower, when it went down, well, when most of it went down, you know, what a catastrophe this was. And then they brought the rest of it down over the weekend so they wouldn't have to worry about the recovery effort and the other part of the tower possibly collapsing on recovery workers. And but Diane has done, trust me on this, a lot of research on this deal.
And at the end, I've got something new that
it's so new she won't even tell me
part of it.
Yeah, it's so new she won't even tell me what it is.
No.
So I'll find out with the rest of you folks, and then after that, I'm talking about liberals with bloody hands pointing fingers.
Yes.
Okay, so a couple of big segments coming up. We're going to start, though, with quick hitters. We're only going to hit three of them tonight because, like I said, we want to get out of this segment a little bit early. We start with TC Energy. That is the company that was trying to build the Keystone XL pipeline, mm-hmm. the one that Trump okayed, the one that Biden put an end to. Well, TC Energy, they had to pull the plug on the whole thing. Now, because of the trade agreement, the Canada-U.S.-Mexico trade agreement, they are now seeking a ton of money in damages.
They're actually seeking $15 billion due to the U.S. government's breach of its NAFTA obligations. Because remember, this pipeline would have directly created more than 10,000 U.S. what they call high-quality jobs and local contracting opportunities. And that, you know, when you think about it, the number would be even higher because it would have created 26,100 adjunct industry jobs. It's indirect to the pipeline, but yet it's part of the pipeline's economy, basically.
Right.
And what Biden did, he canceled the actual permit that was needed.
Well, and the permit that was completely legal, completely above board.
Yes.
TC Energy is based in Canada, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're out a whole lot of money, too, because they had already begun the construction process on this. And they had all this stuff lined up. It was, you know, everything was in progress. Now, having pulled the plug because they had no other choice, now they are financially damaged. Not only are our businesses damaged, but so is their business. And they are seeking $15 billion in a lawsuit.
Also, folks need to know, this is not just the company going after this. It's also a lawsuit from a coalition of 21 states. It's led by Texas and Montana. And what they're claiming is Biden does not have the unilateral authority to change energy policy that the U.S. Congress had already approved.
Well, and Biden's out on this as well. Congress didn't approve the permit. That was a presidential executive order that approved the permit. So he thinks, you know, Biden thinks he's in the clear on this.
He's
but
not.
The bottom line is, if $15 billion has to be paid out, that's our tax money.
Exactly. And you know, Biden can stand on his head till he's purple, but Congress did approve the pipeline.
Yes, they did approve the pipeline, but
okay,
not the permit.
You know, a technicality, if you will, of a permit is a piece of paper. Congress approved the pipeline. So what he's doing is actually negating what Congress approved.
It's true. That's absolutely true. Now, if I'm not an expert in these things by any means, but if I had to hazard a guess, I'd say this is going to be in court for a good, what, couple of weeks? Couple of decades?
I hope it's overturned within maybe a week to 2 weeks. I know that's wishful thinking, but we got to get this pipeline up and running, folks. Have you experienced the price of gas at the pumps now? It was $4.35 here yesterday when we went to fill up.
Do you see what it was in Los Angeles yesterday? $5.50 a gallon.
L.A. kind of deserves what they get.
Well, I know, but I mean, good Lord, you know. Yes. And so, yeah, this thing's going to be tied up in court for a while. There's going to be a lot of screaming and yelling, pushing and shoving, eye gouging and scratching before this is over.
Yes.
Moving along, we'll keep an eye on it, but don't expect anything to happen fast on this, folks. No. I'm just telling you. Veterans are now demanding that Joe Biden take action on behalf of Afghan interpreters and other people because Joe, in pulling out of Afghanistan the way he is, he's leaving all these interpreters hanging.
Yeah. In other words, Joe Biden's foreign policy, in a word, sucks.
It's Obama's foreign policy.
This is not just going to affect Afghanistan. They're going to be overrun with the Taliban, but this is going to affect how the world sees us.
Well, obviously it is, but it's not Biden's foreign policy. It's Obama's. And if you need proof of that, you go back to when the SEAL Team 6 got bin Laden. Remember, folks, the doctor from Pakistan that helped identify bin Laden? Obama left him swinging in the breeze.
Yeah.
This isn't any different. This is the same thing. This is Obama's policy.
Well, here's something else. Now, the Biden and his administration has started notifying lawmakers that the U.S. would soon begin relocating thousands of Afghan allies to third countries as they await processing for their special immigrant visas to come here.
Now, look, I don't begrudge these interpreters visas to come here. These people did incredible work at great risk to their lives and the lives of their families. Okay?
Yeah.
But to put these people on hold while we let our southern border just tsunami with illegal aliens, this is sick.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. These are people really seeking persecution because when the Taliban take over, these are the first people that are going to be killed.
Yep.
That's simply the case. These are people that are pro-American. The ones coming in on the southern border want to turn our country into the crap holes they're leaving.
Yeah, this is sick. And the veterans, they had a big rally, protest, whatever you want to call it, in Washington, D.C. yesterday. And they're right. I mean, they're saying, look, these are the people that helped us. These are the people that helped keep a lot of our people alive. These are the people that put their lives on the line for the U.S., don't leave them hanging, you know.
Well, you forget Biden as commander in chief is useless.
I'm not forgetting
they're
that.
More concerned. They're more concerned about having the U.S. military allow for transgender surgeries. That's what they're more concerned about.
This is insanity. It's insanity.
Yes.
I mean, the first people they should get out of there are these Afghanis who helped us.
Correct.
I mean, good Lord.
Yeah.
It's kind of a no-brainer. And finally, in the quick hitters tonight, this is fascinating to me. Dean Cain, who used to be Superman on TV in the TV show Lois and Clark, Dean Cain is pissed at Marvel Comics and at their brand new Captain America.
Yeah, apparently Captain America has woke up.
Yeah, he's woke. It's Captain Anti-America now.
Yeah, this is sick, folks.
You know, you got to tip your hat to Dean Cain. I mean, he's one of the good guys. You know, sure. They're few and far between in Hollywood. You don't find very many people like Dean Cain, but boy, is he pissed. I mean, in the new Marvel comic book, the first thing, right off the bat, first lines in this new Captain America comic book are very anti-American. And they're coming, mm-hmm. supposedly, from Captain America.
Yeah, none of this makes sense. But, you know, Dean Cain is a patriot. And he actually believes that basically what he said was the pendulum will swing back to openly appreciating American values, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, as soon as people start studying them in school again. In other words, he sees the problems here started with the educational system now, with all that stupid critical race theory, Common Core. He understands that for this nonsense to stop, to end it here with this generation, is to bring back true American education the way it was.
Right. Now, I know there's people probably sitting at home right now or listening to the podcast down the road, and they're thinking, why are the right side patriots? Why are Craig and Diane talking about a freaking comic book? It's a comic book. Let it go. Let me tell you something. We're bringing this up because comic books are aimed at kids. Mm-hmm. Okay? And when little kids who love superheroes and superhero movies and superhero comic books, when they pick one of these up, and they start reading that Captain America doesn't particularly care for America, they're impressionable. You know, we're talking about 8, 9, 10-year-old kids, right? They're impressionable, and they're going to see that. This is part of the liberal agenda. Force this stuff on kids 24/7, 365, and make them hate America. That's what this is about.
Yes, and this is all started with Obama, with his fundamental change of America. Every problem we are facing today originated with him, his administration, and his wife, who would not put her hand over her heart for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Remember at the 9/11 memorial when Mouchel said, all this for a damn flag?
Right. Oh. Never forget it.
I mean, folks, you can trace this back right to those two.
Yep. Everything we're facing today. And then you add in, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon Martin. There's all your violence. There's your making people like George Floyd into saints.
It's disgusting.
It all started with Obama.
But I'll tell you what. Kudos to Dean Cain.
Yes.
I mean, here's a guy. Yeah, he played Superman, but I'll tell you something. As much as Superman was for truth, justice, and the American way, so is Dean Cain in real life.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I mean, and by the way, I loved that show, Lois and Clark.
I never saw it.
That was one of the best adaptations of Superman ever. Dean Cain was perfect in the role. Terry Hatcher was perfect.
Chris Reeves died.
Well, you know, the movies, the Superman movies, they've never been the same without Christopher Reeves. But as a television adaptation, I'm telling you, Dean Cain was the man. He was absolutely spot on perfect for that role. But kudos to Dean Cain for taking a stand and making it known. And shame on Marvel Comics.
Absolutely.
All right, so we've gotten to the end of this abbreviated first segment. We're going to take a quick break here, get a couple of station IDs in. Then when we come back, the collapse of the tower, not in Miami, because Miami is this and that and the other. Surfside, like I said before, its own little town, as Diana's always quick to point out. But the depth of the problem with this building, folks, if you haven't read Diane's op-ed yet, you're in for an eye-opener here in just a couple of minutes. I know because I've read it. So hang on. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
Hi, guys. Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor, Tuesday night edition of the show. And if you miss any part of it, tomorrow morning you can go to rspradio1.com, click the podcast button, become a pod person, and all of our shows are right there. Okay, so the Champlain Tower down there in Florida, and this collapse, and there's been, Diane, as you well know, scads of people guessing this, that, and the other thing as to what caused the collapse, but you have looked into it, not only looking into it just observationally, but looking into it from a standpoint of looking at the blueprints and talking with several, not one, but several engineers. What did you find out?
Yeah, well, first, let's start with this quote, and it is, I don't know if you guys recognize that. Did you see how thin those slabs are and how thin those columns are? That was a structurally deficient building, in my opinion. And that was said by President and Master Builder Donald Trump on the Champlain Tower South Building collapse. Now, I knew that building. Many of us did. My husband even had a patient who once lived there. One of the older buildings along Collins Avenue in the little town of Surfside on Miami Beach, Champlain Towers, a 12-story, 40-year-old beachfront condominium, was built to withstand extreme weather conditions, including hurricane-force winds. Home to both permanent residents and snowbirds who rented out their condos during the off-season, the Champlain Towers was simplified luxury, built more in an old-school manner and design than that of today's glass towers that reach up and touch the sky. And now all that remains is a shell. Now it's completely gone, but when I wrote this, a shell of its former self. For on June 24th, 2021, at approximately 1:30 a.m. EST, Champlain Tower South partially collapsed. And while, as I was writing this, 22 people were confirmed dead, with 128 others remaining missing or unaccounted for. The fact is that with 12 stories of concrete and rubble laying on top of them, reality dictates that they most surely are dead. And this, albeit on a much smaller scale, sadly brings back 20-year-old memories of a sunny day in September when so many lost family and friends when two buildings collapsed, leaving over 3,000 Americans dead. And just like back in 2001, there is one key question that now demands an answer, as in, why did the Champlain Towers South Building collapse? And while the Democrats, including Joe Biden, as a means by which to push forward their climate change agenda, do hope that's why the building fell. But in my opinion, no, it is not. And I say this no matter the words of one Ben Schaefer, a Johns Hopkins University structural engineer, who upon hearing of the building's collapse stated in part that, quote, climate change is changing the demands on all our buildings across the U.S., and sea level rise is one example of something that's much broader, end quote. So why do I believe he is off base with this, his demands on all our buildings scenario? Because while it's true that sea levels naturally do rise and then recede back, it is also true, but not well known, that as the beaches along Miami Beach's shoreline began eroding back in the late 1960s, when high tides brought the ocean's water much closer into shore and at times entered the underground garages of some existing oceanfront buildings, what's not told by the Democrat-controlled mainstream media is that this scenario is extremely unlikely to happen today. And why? Because of something called the Miami-Dade County Beach Erosion Control Master Plan, and I have the link to it, a plan initiated under the auspices of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, a plan that, when completed in the 1980s, saw 13 miles of protective beach fill extending from Government Cut, where Miami Beach begins, through Haulover Beach Park and ending at the town of Golden Beach, with Surfside, Florida, hence the Champlain Towers, within the said fill range. Now, the project was constructed via a series of six contracts and utilized sand dredged from offshore, what's called borrow sources, which led to the widening of the beaches to at least 200 plus yards, as can be seen in the picture in my article. In much simpler terms, this plan saw the widening of the entirety of the beaches, stretching from the tip of Miami Beach up to basically the Broward County line, with structural solutions like breakwaters and gaines also being added to help keep the ocean waters from encroaching on the oceanfront properties. So, if water did routinely enter the South Tower, as some claim, the fault would not be because of climate change, but because of serious and sudden breach erosion or some breach in either the Army Corps of Engineers beach upkeep of the breakwaters and gaines, which is highly unlikely, or because of shoddy building maintenance or, Craig, something else entirely.
Well, you know, one of the things that there's been a lot of speculation on, and especially early, was sinkholes, because sinkholes are common in different parts of Florida, and people started yelling, oh, it's a sinkhole, it was a sinkhole. Was it a sinkhole?
No. In no way did a sinkhole destroy the pool, the deck, nor did it suck the South Tower into it, for a sinkhole has telltale signs, none of which have been discovered on scene. And besides, this building's specific location is not now, nor has it ever been, a likely spot for sinkholes. So really, what brought the Champlain Tower South Building down? Let me explain what I now believe happened. While some residents continue to question the now clearly seen visible space between the pool, know that it is not uncommon for condo-sized pools to have just such a space, for that's where the pipes and plumbing needed to keep said pool up and running are laid. And it also leaves enough crawl space for workers to make certain repairs if need be. However, something that does raise serious concern is the deck itself. A deck that is basically a reinforced concrete slab with decorative pavers on top. A deck which, as per code, had the required waterproofing membrane being laid correctly under the concrete slab, still saw the deck itself being flat and not sloping away from the pool, thus not allowing for proper water runoff and drainage. So, where does what would then be standing water on the deck go? That which did not evaporate naturally would eventually sink down between the pavers. And what with Florida seeing as much rain as we do during the summer months, in time, that would breach the waterproof membrane and affect the now aging concrete, with said water eventually landing in the 120-space parking garage, a garage which not only extended under what is the hollow deck of the pool, but which butts right up to the pool's edge. This would explain the water many residents complained about seeing in the garage over the years. Now here, Craig, it's important to note the pillars themselves, their size variations, and their actual placement within the garage. And know that parking space number 78 is really ground zero for what was to follow, for it was around this area where the critical load-bearing pillars are, or should I say, should have been. For these pillars were not the much-needed wider pillars that can be seen in other areas of the building, but were a series of five thinner pillars not capable of holding up what was the key central load-bearing points of the building.
Well, and the timeline, the time frame of the collapse of the towers was preceded by the collapse of the deck. But the collapse of the deck, even the photos we see of it now in the images that you were able to get your hands on, show a very specific way this deck collapsed.
Right. Well, exactly. The deck actually collapsed 10 minutes before the tower, and it actually fell 6 feet into the middle of the garage due to what's called punching shear, with space number 78 now becoming the central point of the collapse, as the thinner support pillars that surrounded that area were not able to bear the weight of the building, which thicker and wider pillars would have been able to do. And with Miami structural architect Kobe Karp now also calling the collapse the result of an internal failure, he adds to engineer Jeff Ostroff's scenario. And you can see Jeff's scenario in the video in my article, and it's called How It Collapsed. And now he said that a compromise at the point where the pillars and the two parts of the L-shaped building join together is the point where the most load-bearing stress would be, as in where the horizontal slab of the building meets the vertical support wall as well as the support pillars, and where water could also have gradually seeped underneath and even wicked upwards over the years, causing corrosion, rust, etc., to have built up. Now that's Kobe Karp's version. And over time, this could also have led to a central breach in the bottom floor at its vertical to horizontal joining point, causing it to eventually give way and collapse in on itself, thus bringing the rest of that tower section down along with it. A sudden horrific collapse, with the tower's final landing point looking not unlike the fertilizer-bombed Murrah Federal Building. And folks, that's what led many of us at the beginning to think that some kind of act of domestic terrorism took the building down. Now, as for the visual flashes of light seen in the videos emanating from the 10th, 12th, and from the rooftop, those flashes were most likely the electrical workings of the elevators now being compromised as the elevators housed within where the buildings were joined together was drawn down into the vertical shafts where the stairwells also were, which would explain what some survivors said about their running towards the elevators and stairs to escape, but there being neither elevators nor stairs there. Craig, all that was left was a smoldering, collapsed shaft with cables dangling, sparks popping, and concrete falling.
Well, yeah, and as every electrical box in the place became detached, those things would arc out and those flashes would be there. Okay, so we've got the physical collapse, but you and I both know the court case on this is going to go on for a long time, and there's going to be a lot of different court cases. Court cases assess blame. So, given what you've seen and what you've discerned, where does the blame lie in this deal?
Okay. I'm going to tell you folks where I believe the blame lies. In my opinion, it's both the Champlain Towers' original architect, who designed a highly flawed pool deck, and in his possibly cost-cutting measures regarding the pillars and their load-bearing capabilities, coupled with the past and current Champlain Towers condo board, who were willfully negligent in their duties, as in gross negligence regarding structural defects they knew about for years, but which they did not attend to. And here I've included pages from a certain report, and that report I'll tell you about in a minute. Okay, now here let me begin by stating that while residents did file complaints with the board over the years about, amongst other things, water in the garage, cracks in the wall, pool issues, apartment ceiling leaks, etc., in 2018, as the building was nearing its county-mandated 40-year recertification, a mandatory what's called, and the link is here, structural field survey report done by engineer Frank P. Morabito of Morabito Consultants, Inc., found numerous problems with the building that needed to be addressed in what was stated as, quote, in the near future, and included words such as, quote, significant cracks and breaks in the concrete, which required repairs to ensure the safety of the residents and the public, end quote. And in said report to the condo board, the report also stated that, quote, significant deterioration would require an estimated $15 million in repairs, end quote. Now, that's a lot of money for sure. But well-managed and diligent condominium board of directors and associations make sure reserves are in place for emergency repairs, in addition to routine building assessments being passed on to the condo owners for more expensive and time-consuming repairs. This, of course, is on top of monthly maintenance fees all condo owners pay, but all set costs are clearly stated in one ownership's deed. So the question is, why weren't the repairs mentioned in the structural engineer's report done, or at least started back in 2018? Let alone, why weren't certain issues addressed back in the 1990s, when previous reports show that the South Tower was sinking at a rate of about 2 millimeters a year? In fact, back then, a few residents even sued the board after issues regarding crack walls and balconies remained unaddressed, even though it was well known that cracked walls and balconies could be an indicator that sinking had occurred, sinking which in turn could eventually affect the stability of a building. But here know that the South Tower sister building, the North Tower, apparently, at least at this point in time, does not have these same issues, yet it still raises questions as to building materials used, codes being or not being met, and safety inspections being made when the South Tower itself was under construction. But this does not excuse the 2018 condo board from not starting the repair cited in the engineer's report immediately. And know that a few of the same folks remained on the 7-member board today. But Craig, Sadly, two of those board members are among the missing, and that said board has now lawyered up, as they say.
Well, if they've lawyered up, have we heard from their attorney? Because attorneys, you know, part of their job when you lawyer up is to deflect criticism and sidestep issues. So has their legal eagle spoken up yet?
Oh, he sure has. In fact, his name is Kenneth Director, and he claims that, quote, they were just about to get started on it, meaning the repairs, and that he has seen nothing to, quote, suggest that the collapse had anything to do with the issues identified in the engineer's review, end quote, and that if there had been anything to suggest that a collapse was possible, the review process, as in the time repairs were given the okay to commence, would have been, quote, handled very differently. Really? Handled very differently? Well, here's an interesting side note regarding just that. It seems that back in 2018, the board was divided and squabbling amongst themselves about initiating the repairs cited in the engineer's report, especially after then Surfside building official Rosenda Prieto reviewed said report and noted that while the report, quote, was not in the format for the 40-year certification, he nevertheless determined that the necessary data had been collected and that, quote, it appears the building is in very good shape, end quote. And yet some on the board were not buying it, with the board's then president, Annette Goldstein, resigning from the 7-member board in the fall of 2019 due to what she called, quote, slow response and continuing debate among board members about the scope, truths, and costs of the work that needed to be done. Simply, Mrs. Goldstein was scared, not of what was, but of what could and eventually did happen. And Craig, know that soon after she resigned from the board, 4 other board members resigned as well. And I have included her letter in full in the article.
Well, you know, when you look at that letter and you see what she's saying in that resignation letter, it doesn't jive at all with what that legal eagle is trying to put across. So, and I guarantee you Mrs. Goldstein is on the right side of the issue. We all know that now, right?
Right.
But given all of that, okay, where does that leave us at this point in the blame game, or who's responsible is probably the better way to put it. Where does the board of directors for Champlain Towers stand at this point?
Well, simply, no matter what the cost of the South Tower collapse is eventually determined to be, and know, of course, that faulty structural issues will surely be at the crux of it, meaning issues regarding the actual construction of the building, materials used, and or previous complaints not addressed, the folks who sat on the Champlain Towers condos board must also be held legally somewhat responsible and found guilty of culpable negligence, if nothing else, for they knew well the dangers that could possibly happen, yet did nothing in a timely manner to see that those issues were addressed. And now, as lawsuits are being filed on the residents' behalf, lawsuits serving as the touch-off point for a class action lawsuit that is sure to follow, the blame game will sadly continue to be played by those Democrats who, of course, will not let this tragedy go to waste. And probably with 150 or so of our fellow South Floridians laying dead, it's we, along with the families who have lost loved ones and friends, who will grieve with them. What did happen should never have happened, and political agendas must be put aside so that some form of closure can take place as loved ones are buried and life goes on, while lawsuits start landing in the courts, lawsuits that will take years to adjudicate. In other words, the Champlain Towers tragedy will now become part of South Florida's legacy for many years to come. And maybe because of just that, some across the board, long overdue, construction changes will be made to assure that such a collapse never happens again. A legacy for much-needed positive construction change will, as numerous times and instances have shown, sadly been accomplished as the result of innocent lives having been lost.
You know, sadly for the legal eagle on this thing, whose name is actually Director, and it's spelled like, should be Russian, it's got a K in it. Sadly for him, he failed to take into account that a board of directors like this, and when board members resign, there is a paper trail of information. The paper trail of information is not coming up to what he said was happening. So the board, I think, has got a lot of explaining to do. And I don't know, at this point, I don't know that anybody knows at this point how many board members may have been killed in that collapse.
Well, two are missing as of now. Okay. The body count now is up to 35. They found five more today under the original pile. They cannot name them yet because they're in very bad shape. They have to do DNA. But also today I became privy to some information that I think people need to know, and it kind of goes along a little bit with President Trump said. Right. This has to do with what's called post-tensioned floor slabs. Now, that's simply a method of producing pre-stressed concrete, masonry, and other structural elements. In fact, post-tensioning tendons within the concrete formwork of a high rise, for example, are done in a manner similar to that of installing rebar, something alluded to in the tower's fall, with post-tensioned concrete being stronger and more flexible than standard conventional reinforced concrete. Simply, if the cables of the floors, including the garage floor of the South Tower, were not well connected to the vertical columns or were rusted and or water damaged, that weakens the floor and can cause a collapse, especially to a building that has what's called flat plate floor slabs, which the Champlain Towers had. As in floor slabs that are relatively thin concrete slabs supported directly on columns, meaning the building is lightly braced by sheer walls, which the South Tower was. In other words, cheapening of the actual building, the materials that were needed. This building needed the thick support towers, and it had some, but it didn't have them in the key area of the garage, which was the main support. It had five very thin towers, pillars, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, you look at the size of that pool deck. That was a huge pool deck, okay? Yes. And what nobody, including us, at first realized was that the parking went clear underneath there, all the way up to the pool itself. Yes. And so that whole space underneath there, and this people say, well, there's a sinkhole. Well, that pool deck wasn't sitting on the ground. It was sitting over a hollow space where cars were parked. So, no, sinkhole is out. The first thing you can dismiss in this whole scenario is climate change.
Oh, that's a joke.
Okay, that's a joke. And I'll tell you something else. Don't be surprised, folks. Don't be surprised if somebody comes along, a liberal, and says COVID had something to do with it, because they could have started the repair process earlier had COVID not wiped out an entire year. Well, that doesn't really fly down in Florida very well.
They come across with that crap down here, and they're not going to be met very well with that.
No, I mean, Florida was one of those places where you could have started during the middle of COVID, you know. Mm-hmm. And plus, this report came out in 2018, not 2020.
Yes.
You know, exactly. So I mean, there's a lot of, but don't be surprised if somebody does COVID, you know. But yeah, you look at this thing and you get into this thing and you can really see what happens when that deck dropped. Okay, that took away the support for the building itself. When that deck went, that building was coming down. I mean, it was coming down. There was no way that building was not going to come down.
No, it was coming down no matter what. And it's very strange how these things touch different people. The patient that my husband had in that building, she died a few years ago. Her son was one of the ones that was now identified as being dead.
Wow. You know, it's amazing. The other day I watched a video, a gentleman, I can't for the life of me remember this fellow's name, but the apartment across the hall, the couple that was living in that apartment, they were from Venezuela, they were killed. This guy got out, but the only way he got out was he had to go out on his deck, on his balcony, and wait for Miami-Dade Fire and Rescue to get him off the balcony. But the people living directly across the hall, gone.
Right.
You know?
Right. Wrong place at the wrong time.
You know, this whole thing, and I, you know, we talked about this, excuse me, a little bit last Friday here on the show. You know, I kind of served in the role of sounding board as Diane was putting this op-ed together. And we have done this for each other countless times over the years. Mm-hmm. She's my sounding board. I'm her sounding board when it comes to, you know, things like this that are so bizarre and so hard to figure out, you know, until you really get to looking at them. And you gotta bounce some ideas off the wall and then start narrowing it down. And that's what Diane was doing. And once Diane got to the point where she had access and could see the blueprints, the layout of the parking garage and things like that, then things started to clear up, you know. There's a lot of conspiracy theories out there, folks. And look, Diane and I, initially, the day after the collapse and for the next couple of days, we were thinking something very different than what this is going to turn out to be. But, you know, it comes with research. It comes with doing the homework. You get to the bottom of things.
Yes. And this post-tensioning, I'm going to be adding it as an addendum to my article on the bottom, just so people know. A couple of engineers I was in contact with because of this article, and they said I basically got it, but there's one other factor, and no one has mentioned this post-tensioning, except President Trump kind of alluded to it without using the words. And now what's happening is many condos on Miami Beach and all the little cities, they're getting inspected, and some of them are getting unsafe notices.
Well, I'll tell you something. I would, if I was Miami-Dade County at this point, I'd pull up every record that this particular architect had anything to do with, and I'd be out there inspecting every damn one of them, because I'll tell you, when you find out that the pool deck is flat as a pancake, when it's designed flat as a pancake, that's a giant waving red flag.
Absolutely. Anyone who has a built-in pool, all our pools are built on a slope in our backyards. I'm talking about in private homes. So that when the water comes, when it rains, when it splashes out, it rolls down your pool deck onto the lawns. This building was not done so. That pool deck was flat. I saw pictures of puddles laying there.
Yeah.
That should never be on a pool deck. It should always be running off. So one of the main flaws started with this pool deck. If they had sloped it the way it should have been with the runoff, that building would still be standing.
Well, I'll tell you something. You know, it's funny you bring that up. To me, it's a wonder, an absolute wonder, that this building didn't go down 5, 10, 20 years ago.
It takes a while for that stuff to build up.
I know it does, but I mean, when you look at the way this deck was designed, okay, it was literally a disaster waiting to happen. And basically, that's what the report says. You know, you got to do this because the problems that are caused by the way this thing is designed are going to grow worse. And the word they used was exponentially.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's like saying, fix it now or you're going to be sorry. You know?
Well, they're sorry. And, but sorry doesn't cut it.
Well, I'll tell you this. I'm glad of only one thing in this entire, you know, what you call a cacophony of design flaws and construction mistakes. And that, by the way, folks, is the title of the op-ed, which you can find at thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com or at rspradio1.com. You want to grab the link, you want to share it. But the only thing in this that I am glad for at this point is the fact that they were able to do what they did before this past weekend and then bring the rest of that tower down so they can finish the recovery effort. They have not had any injuries to the search and recovery people.
Yeah, and that's true, and that's a good thing.
You got to hand it to my,
they're putting their lives on the line in something like this.
You got to hand it to Miami-Dade Fire and Rescue and everybody else involved down there for being able to get as much done as they did before they brought the rest of the tower down safely over the weekend. Because if they hadn't, and this storm, Elsa, that's moving through Florida right now, if that thing had been worse and hit that area, that the rest of that tower is going to come down on top of whoever was working there.
Yeah.
That would not be good.
When you add this post-tensioning in with everything else that I wrote about and the videos, if you watch the videos that I've included in this by real experts, I'm no expert, but I do know how to research. And I'm not a conspiratorist. You can see this was negligence, design flaws, and construction just malfeasance. Did the architect know that they, you know, skimped on the pillars? I don't know. Back then, did an architect just turn over the blueprints and then walk away from it, or were they on site? I don't know those logistics of the building of this building.
I can tell you,
but
I can tell you by looking at the blueprints, the design of those skinny pillars was skinny. You could see the difference in the blueprint.
Right.
So that's the architect.
Compared to the way they should have been.
That's the architect. That's not the builder.
Okay? Right.
And and you can't count out the negligence of the board of directors for Champlain Towers. They're right in there.
Yeah.
Folks, once again, you can get this op-ed at thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com or rspradio1.com and get it out there and get it shared because people need to know this information. The rumor mill is going to run rampant. And it's going to take a long time before all the different things, all the different causes of this are being made public because officially they're not going to put anything out there until they can put it all out there. And trust me, there's enough flaws that it's going to take some time.
Yes. Yeah, but so, it's a sad thing. And,
it is.
Whole families were wiped out. And hopefully, you know, it was in the middle of the night. I hope the ones that did lose their lives lost them instantaneously. Because being buried under rubble and then having the other half of the building fall on top of that rubble, if anybody was alive, they would have been killed Sunday night when the other building came down.
Yep, absolutely. Folks, got to take a quick break. Top of the hour here, a couple of station IDs. When we come back, I'm talking about liberals with bloody hands pointing fingers. More Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi guys, Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on rspradio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor, getting you through a Tuesday night edition of the show. Like I said before, if you miss any part of tonight's show, or you want to catch one of our past shows, go to rspradio1.com, click on the podcast button, and you're there. It's all going to be there waiting for you, thanks to Podbean, and that means you can be one of the pod people. All right, it is, but it's true.
And we
love our pod people.
Yes.
We absolutely do. All right, so Diane took on a very serious topic, obviously, that you just heard about. And I'll tell you something. This whole business about defunding the police is really, really grinding my gears. And I took this on because of some stuff that was starting to be said last week. And I put this under the title of Liberals with Bloody Hands Pointing Fingers. First of all,
yes,
defunding the police has got to be the most butt-stupid idea liberals have come up with yet. And that's saying quite a bit, because over the years, they've come up with a whole lot of butt-stupid ideas. Liberal Marxists have been telling us for better than a year now that defunding the police will make our towns and cities safer. That goes right along with one of their other butt-stupid ideas of letting criminals out of prison in order to make our towns and cities safer. It's all part and parcel of the liberal Marxist notion that no individual should be held responsible for their own criminal activity, because it's always somebody else's fault, or the fault of some inanimate object, or some societal or ethereal thing that has no application to the current situation. To the liberal Marxists, guns are the problem, not the people that use them in the commission of a crime. To the liberal Marxists, climate change is the reason why a building in Surfside, Florida fell down, and only by throwing taxpayer money at the weather, which, by the way, had nothing whatsoever to do with it, can we prevent other buildings from falling down. To the liberal Marxists, the reason why an overwhelming number of black people in America are either in prison or on welfare is because of slavery, which ended better than 150 years ago. No black person alive today was ever a slave in America, and no person in America today was ever a slaveholder. But a minority of the black community in America today claims to be oppressed by slavery, and they are demanding reparations for slavery because liberal Marxists have been telling them for decades that they are victims of slavery. It's insane, but liberal Marxists will always find a way to blame somebody else. Along those lines, Diane, liberal Marxists are now blaming conservatives for wanting to defund the police.
Yeah, no, that's true. And a liberal Marxist, who's actually a big Biden shill, his name is Cedric Richman, had the most stupid thing to say that I've heard in quite a while.
Well, he did. He said, and I quote, when we were in Congress last year trying to pass a rescue plan, I'm sorry, not the rescue plan, but an emergency relief plan for cities that were cash-strapped and laying off police officers and firefighters, it was the Republicans who objected to it. And in fact, they didn't get funding until the American Rescue Plan, which our plan allowed state and local governments to replenish their police departments and do other things that are needed, unquote. After that, liberal Marxist Biden shill Jen Psaki said, and I quote again, well, the president did mention that the American Rescue Plan, the state and local funding, something that was supported by the president, a lot of Democrats who supported and voted for the bill, could help ensure local cops were kept on the beat in communities across the country. As you know, it didn't receive a single Republican vote. That funding has been used to keep cops on the beat, unquote. Well, that's very interesting, since the so-called American Rescue Plan failed to include one word about using the money to hire cops. Mm-hmm. In fact, for more than a year now, we have all heard one liberal Marxist after the next call for defunding the police. And we've all seen one liberal Marxist blue city or blue state leader after another doing exactly that. Maxine Waters called for confronting the police. Liberal Marxist Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison said he no longer wanted the police to respond to rape. James Clyburn, a liberal Marxist congressman, called police the Gestapo and said the only violence he ever saw in Washington, D.C. was perpetrated by the police. After her election, Cori Bush, a liberal Marxist congresswoman, actually called for defunding the police, as did a Minneapolis City Council president, Lisa Bender. In fact, the Minneapolis City Council voted to defund the police, and the vast majority of them are liberal Marxists. Liberal Marxist Ilhan Omar called for defunding the Minneapolis Police Department, and Congresswoman Val Demings praised the Minneapolis City Council for voting to dismantle their police department. Moving up the liberal Marxist ladder, Biden's Assistant Attorney General Kristen Clark, a liberal Marxist, wrote a piece for Newsweek last year calling for defunding the police. Biden's Secretary of Labor, Marty Walsh, a liberal Marxist, came up with a budget to divert funding from police departments, and Biden's liberal Marxist Associate Attorney General, Vanita Gupta, said officials must, quote, decrease police budgets and the scope, role, and responsibility of police in our lives, unquote. Not high enough up the ladder yet, folks? Okay. How about Kamala Harris, who praised Eric Garcetti for defunding the police department in Los Angeles and then said, quote, we have to reimagine public safety, unquote, while she was advocating for defunding the police departments across the country. Hell, Diane, during the 2020 campaign, we had blathering Joe Biden calling for reallocating police funding.
Yeah, basically what this boils down to, folks, is Democrats don't want police. They want to allow the element to run, basically to run our cities.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Anyway, it seems like that's their agenda. You get rid of the police, crime surges, the politicians become impotent to do anything because there's no police to back them up. So who's running the city? The element.
That's right. That's right. Look, the list I just read off to you, that's only a partial list. It doesn't include any of the liberal Marxists in the mainstream media who were shilling the butt-stupid idea of defunding the police for better than a year all over their 24/7 news cycles. Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Baltimore, Maryland, Los Angeles, California, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C., and New York City, New York, all under the direct control of liberal Marxists, cut police budgets or voted to do away with their police. Again, that's a partial list, but you get the idea. Defunding the police was their idea, not the idea of conservatives. And folks, I've got videos, lots of videos, locked and loaded in this blog, okay, in this commentary. You've got to watch them. Did all these people forget they were on tape? Seriously? Regardless of the desperation involved in trying to blame conservatives for their own policies and their own advocacy, liberal Marxists own defunding the police, and they know it. So, how has it all worked out? Well, in Minneapolis, murders were up 49% over the same time last year since they cut their police budget last July. In New York City, since they cut the police budget, murders have risen by 166%. And murders in Los Angeles, since cutting their budget for the police, are up 200%. Seattle, Washington, since defunding the police, has watched their murder rate climb to its highest level in 26 years. Philly has become the nation's second leading homicide city. And Oakland, California, has recorded a 90% rise in murders since they cut $18 million out of their police department budget. The National Fraternal Order of Police says Portland, Oregon's murder rate has skyrocketed by, are you ready for this, 800% since they cut police funding. Other violent crime, in general, is up across the board for every city that cut their police budget. But the liberal Marxists, until last week, said that it had nothing at all to do with defunding or cutting police budgets. But last week changed all of that because the liberal Marxists could no longer pretend it wasn't happening. Americans of all stripes who live in those places are pissed. Diane, they don't feel safe, and they know that they're not safe. They also know that the very people they put in office in their cities who spent the better part of 2020 calling for such cuts and defunding are responsible, and the liberal Marxist elite are terrified of losing elections in 2022.
Well, you can't forget one important thing. They might be terrified of losing elections, but as long as Dominion voting machines are being used, they can still win.
Yeah, that's a sad statement, but very true.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it just is. Look, they've gone from categorically denying that the problem even exists to blaming the problem on conservatives. It's not their fault that fewer police are on the streets and that equals more crime on the streets. It's the fault of conservatives, whom the liberal Marxists now say, despite mountains of evidence to the contrary, called for defunding the police. The liberal Marxist machine has committed slow suicide with their policy regarding the police, and they know it. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. Cops are leaving the force in cities and towns across this country because they've been handcuffed, prevented from protecting and serving due to the possibility of baseless litigation. They no longer feel they can do their jobs without some idiot suing them, or worse, killing them. Mm-hmm. In 2020, 46 police officers were murdered in the line of duty. But as of the end of May this year, in only 5 months, there have been 37 cops murdered, and you can barely go a day or two without hearing on the news of another cop being shot or killed by some scum-of-the-earth criminal piece of crap. What that means to the general public is that people feel less safe at home, at work, on the streets, in parks, or walking down the sidewalk. They feel that way because they are less safe. But there is another side to that coin. The criminal element, whether it be the element that commits property crimes all the way up to the element that commits violent crimes, feels more safe in their criminal activities. They know there are fewer cops on the streets, and they know that response times are way up. That emboldens the criminal element to wage war on law-abiding citizens at will. They know there's less of a chance of being stopped, less of a chance of being caught, and a much greater chance that they will simply be released from jail in a matter of a few hours to return to perpetrate more crimes, thanks again to the liberal Marxist policies. Just a couple of weeks ago, NBC ran a story on the surge of police officers being killed in the line of duty. But there's something odd about the clip that I've included in this commentary. When you watch this clip, see if you catch it. Right at the beginning of the clip, the anchor says, quote, "America has suffered a dramatic rise in crime since the start of the pandemic," unquote. No, you liberal Marxist propagandist, you. The pandemic had nothing to do with it. The all-out liberal Marxist assault on law enforcement, not since the beginning of the pandemic, but since the policy of defunding the police, has everything to do with it. That's the policy you and your cohorts in rising crime advocated for. That's the policy you voted and advocated for. It's the policy you said would make us all safer. But it didn't make us safer. In fact, it made us all less safe. But now, the liberal Marxists are trying in desperation to blame conservatives for their policy and agenda. They're claiming, Diane, it's because Republicans wouldn't sign on to a spending bill that the liberal Marxists wrote that never mentions using a dime of that money to fund the police.
Well, in other words, these liberal Marxists, they have blood on their hands. A lot of blood, and it's only getting worse.
That is an absolute fact. Defunding the police is a liberal agenda item. It's not a conservative agenda item, and those with blood on their hands should not be pointing fingers. I've got one last video in the commentary, and you have to see it. Watch what happens when Biden's propagandist, Jen Psaki, is asked to cite an example of Republicans wanting to defund the police. She can't do it. She can't do it because it never happened, and she damn well knows it. So let me ask Jen this one last question. Why, if Republicans wanted to defund the police, did every major police union in the country endorse President Trump in 2020. Well, Jen, we're waiting. Or do you need to circle back on that question later?
You know she never will. You know she never did, because she knows she got caught in a lie.
They all got caught in the lie. I mean, Maxine Waters is saying the Republicans want to defund the police.
Waters is what we used to call as kids a waste of protoplasm.
She is. She 100% is. You know, yes. This Cedric Richmond, he's claiming it's the Republicans that wanted to defund the police. Chuckle Schumer, it's the Republicans. It's the every one of them. AOC, right. The squad, the Republicans wanted to defund the police. No. Not one single Republican ever called for defunding the police. And there is a trail of evidence that it was all liberals.
Of course. There's no question about it.
It's crazy.
The liberals, the Democrats, they want to defund the police. They want gun control. They want to take away our guns. They want to take our Second Amendment rights away. They want to blame everything on things that are not reality. In other words, they want to let the criminal element run everything. You know, Tucker Carlson the other night, it might have even been last night, said, you know, when criminals and politicians, or I should say when politicians let criminals basically run wild, you have the start of the fall of your country.
It's
true.
And
we're seeing that happen now.
Yeah, it's 100% true. Look, I'll tell you where this, you know, blame the Republicans on this comes from, right?
Obama.
If you want to dig down that far, yeah. But here's the deal. They start calling for defunding the police in May of 2020. That's the whole George Floyd thing, right? So from May until May, okay, in that 12 months, May of 2020 to May of 2021, violent crime rates and murder rates were skyrocketing as one by one, these blue cities, Atlanta did it, Detroit did it. These blue cities start cutting their police budgets, okay?
Yes.
Once you start doing that, you're giving the criminals free rein on the streets, and violent crime starts to skyrocket, all right? So for a full year, better than a full year, let's call it a good 13 months, okay? You've got these liberals saying, well, yeah, crime's going up, but it's got nothing to do with defunding the police. It certainly has nothing to do.
What does it have to do with?
Well, here's the deal. Okay? Once they realized, about a week ago, that it has everything to do with defunding the police, they had to change their tune. But they couldn't just come out and say, well, it is because the police got defunded. No, they couldn't do that because that hurts their agenda and makes them look like a bunch of liars. They had to come out and say, well, it was the conservatives' idea to defund the police. That's why crime's going up. The conservatives did it. They literally went from saying the problem didn't exist.
One working brain cell believes that for a minute.
Well, liberals do, but hence your point.
Yeah, you know? I said one working brain cell.
You know, I mean, case in point, right? But they literally, in the period of a week, went from saying it's got nothing to do with defunding the police to saying it has everything to do with defunding the police, and that was a Republican idea. Good God! You know? The problem is their voters just lap this stuff up, and the mainstream media just keeps repeating it.
And they forget one key thing. President Trump ran on being a law and order president. Well, you can't be a law and order president without police. So the whole thing is just ludicrous in nature.
It is. It's insanity, if you ask me. Yes. It's insanity. But this is the world we live in today. Look,
yeah.
Conservatives, Republicans, we love the police department. Are there bad cops? You bet. There's always going to be a bad apple in a bushel. Okay.
And I guarantee you it's a very small bunch in that bushel.
It is. And nobody dislikes bad cops like good cops.
Right.
Okay. bad cops are always going to get caught. Hell, one just got caught up in Omaha, over in Omaha, Nebraska, late last week. You know, this guy was, he busts into a woman's home. They had a report that the woman had been neglecting her teenage son, I think it was. Okay, so the police go into her home on Thanksgiving Day. She's got a house full of people, house full of family and guests, right?
Okay.
And this cop goes in there and throws the woman on the floor. She's not resisting, by the way. Throws this woman on the floor, handcuffs her, and drags her out of the house. Well, comes to find out, the report that the child was being neglected was a false report. There's nothing wrong with that child. There's nothing wrong with that teenage kid. Totally false report. Cop completely overreacted. And that cop now sitting in jail because he got physical with this woman when there was absolutely no freaking reason to. Okay?
Well, I mean, serves him right.
Serves him right. You know, so those cops get dealt with, folks. They do. All right? But the world is full of great cops. I'm telling you. Yeah, there's a few stinkers out there, but it's full of great cops.
Of course.
To blame defunding the cops on Republicans? Good grief.
That's just ridiculous. Just ridiculous.
You know, I mean, it's just absolute insanity. Folks, you can get this commentary at thenationalpatriot.com, or you can go to rspradio1.com. Right there, so's Diane's. Diane's is at rspradio1.com, and The Patriot Factor at blogspot.com. .blogspot.com, I should say.
And blogspot.com, yes.
Yeah. Grab both the links and share these things everywhere, because the only way to combat this stuff is to put the truth out there in front of people.
I don't think the Democrats would know the truth if it came up and just slapped them right in the face.
You're probably right. I mean, you know, but I've got the videos. You know, go into that commentary at thenationalpatriot.com. Watch those videos. And especially watch the one of Jen Psaki. She was challenged by Peter Ducey to cite any Republican who called for defunding the police, and she couldn't do it.
There's a lot she can't do, and the main thing she can't do is tell the truth.
that's just a liberal thing. You know, it's just a liberal thing is what that is. Well, look, folks, we've gotten down here to the bottom of the show tonight. We want to thank you for joining us. Don't forget, if you missed any part of tonight's show, and this whole show has been pretty straightforward and hard-hitting, so if you missed any part of this, you want to go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, click on the podcast button. This one will be at the top of the list. Friday's show, 1 hour talk show. We're working on stuff already for next Tuesday, but a lot can happen between now and next Tuesday.
We know that for sure. Nothing will change in, you know, Joe Biden's little corner of the world.
No, as long as he gets his pudding at 4 o'clock, he's happy.
I know. I was just thinking that.
You know. But, folks, thank you for being a part of the show tonight. We appreciate it. And with that, Diane, I think it's time for you and I to just wrap this one up.
Nighty-night, folks.
Good night, everybody. We'll see you Friday.